The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal. At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
One last thing. I noticed you didn't fill out the part about any prior arrests. Hey, we're just a couple of guys talking here, okay? I mean, what are we dealing with? Little DUI, petty theft? This is just formality. No one's perfect.
All right. Well, most recently I was arrested for public intoxication, assault and battery, and willful destruction of property, I think they said. Not necessarily in that order. And a year ago, I was arrested for assaulting a minor.
A minor?
You know, technically multiple minors. You know, these kids were real pricks. You know, it feels really good to talk about this, actually. When we start, boss, what's the plan? Unstable. You're the one that's unstable.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm guess who? Jason.
And I'm Richard.
And I'm Rima.
And this is House Podcastica, Cobra Kai edition.
This week, we're covering Cobra Kai Season 3, Episode 3 and 4, titled Now You're Gonna Pay and The Right Path.
Now you're gonna pay. And we have a special guest with us this time. Welcome to the podcast, Mr. All the Time Call-In, and now gets to be here in person, Steve Brown.
Hey, hi, everybody.
Good to have you on.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm really jazzed because it's kind of cool to get to do feedback or give feedback that's longer than 90 seconds or 2 minutes. That's, you know, I happened to so I have like 2 pages worth of notes. So if I ramble at
awesome.
Some point, I may
get the whole show, not just the night, and you're not restricted.
Is this, exactly. So I don't think you and I have been on a Podcastica podcast before. Steve does a podcast called Panels to Pixels where they talk about adaptations from comic books, film and TV, and I talked about The Boys, which is an amazing show if you guys haven't seen it, but this is the first podcast to go on, right?
I think so. I'm trying to remember if I was on. I don't think I've ever been on a Walking Dead cast.
You were on Game of Microphones.
Yeah, I was on.
I don't think I was on there,
but not with you. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So I did great. With Christian, so
it's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
And I also thought it would be fun because I know you started off a little unsure about Cobra Kai, but you like it now, right?
I am all in, man. Like I have, like even the original movies, I see them in such a different light now. And just like Pat Morita and his portrayal and just everything is, I appreciate them more. I want to watch them more often. I love seeing the flashbacks and remembering and, it was not something that I was like, I remember seeing the movies in the 80s when I was a kid and going to the theaters and watching them. And obviously Peter Cetera soundtrack was awesome. And, talking about it with my friends, but I was never as big of a fan, as like you have been your whole life. And, so it's great now though. I'm a huge fan now. I mean, that episode 4 especially had me the first time watching it, bawling it at a couple points, just
me too.
Just so touched by how the writers captured the voice of the original, the way I could see these characters growing. So
they really nailed it, and it is funny how people ask me you know, when I recommend the show, well, I wasn't that big of a fan of Karate Kid. Do I need to be? And I'm like, nope. One of my podcast hosts wasn't into it either. Rima, and she likes the show, so tends to be all right, even if you weren't a huge fan. Yeah. But if you are, it's even more.
I bet a lot of people have gone back to watch the movies because of the show.
Yeah, I'm sure. And speaking of that, if you haven't seen Karate Kid 2 in a while or at all, I would definitely recommend going back and watching that because, you know, Kumiko showed up. I mean, if you didn't know, this is all referencing stuff from Karate Kid 2. So it'd be really fun to go back and reacquaint yourself with that. But let's get into this week's couple of episodes. It's the top three highlights for Cobra Kai season 3, episodes 3 and 4, Now You're Gonna Pay and The Right Path. So just quickly in general, how did you like these two, Steve?
Oh, I loved them. I thought it was great. It was a great pairing, really, and I can't wait to watch the next one because, you know, episode 3 had a lot of humor in it. But then there were more emotions like in episode 4. Mm-hmm. So it was really cool to see that. Of course, we and different
featured actors too. Like Kreese wasn't even in 3, and
exactly. Yeah. And we did get the one funny moment that I did write down from 4 was, of course, that moment at the end with Johnny and Miguel, where he's you know, you got that emotional 80s music, it's kind of rousing, and Johnny's like, "I'll always be your teacher," and then Miguel falls out of his bed, and he's like, "Oh, you fell like a job, champ, dude."
Yeah, good falls. Nurse.
So you know, so even though we'd seen it in the trailer, it was still cool to watch it actually in the episode and see how it came about. So,
what about you, Rima?
I enjoyed the episodes. The third episode was a little bit of a slower pace. I get that it was more of a building episode, kind of setting up the direction, I guess, for like the rest of the season. So it was a little bit slower than what I would have normally liked. They always do a pretty good job with pacing on the show. So it was a little slower than what I would have liked, but I get it. You know, they have to kind of lay that groundwork a little bit for those character arcs and stuff. And then the fourth episode was, I mean, super fun, kind of going back. They do a good job of putting in some nostalgia and giving you a little bit of fan service, but still kind of balancing it out a little bit. So it was a lot of fun.
And surprising you a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I liked it.
Rich?
Yeah, it was cool. I liked how it started off in episode 3 with Bobby in the church. Yeah. That was great. And then we ended in episode 4 all the way, you know, across the world in Japan. So, I mean, it really covered a huge swath of characters and stories and it was a lot of heartfelt moments, a lot of, you know, anxious moments and a lot of funny moments. So, I enjoyed both episodes tremendously. Me too. They were really good.
Yeah, they were different for a lot of reasons. And yeah, it covers a lot of ground in a lot of different ways, as you guys are saying. And I really liked the second one, episode 4, so much because he went back to his old stomping grounds in Okinawa. But I liked the third one a lot too. Yeah, maybe not quite as much, but I still thought it was great. So let's get into our top three. Steve, what's your number three?
Okay, so it's kind of two combined, but it's kind of the same thing. I liked the fake out we got in episode 3, and then the not fake out that we had in episode 4, and that at the very beginning of episode 3, we get this quote about this miracle worker, hotshot doctor from out of state. And I think I would assume everybody, because that was all the speculation spoiler, was that it's going to be Allie, right? And so through the whole episode, we're hearing about this doctor and this surgery that he's going to have. And then even at the end, we see the back of her head and we see that long blonde hair. And we're like, oh, is that going to be her? And then turns around and is like, nope. Too short, and it's not her, you know.
The wall away from you.
Exactly. And then they did similar in episode 4, but it wasn't a fake out because we start to hear the bone dance music, we see the flashbacks, and then we see the
woman in the mall dancing with the back of her head, and you're like,
and you're like, oh, is this gonna be another fake out? And then of course it turns around and it's Tamlin Tomita herself, and you're like, oh, so we get to see Yumiko. So yeah, that for me, that I thought was really, really cool, just the way they did that.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because it is a total tease. And I think probably they planted that seed of Allie being a pediatric surgeon and then having Miguel get hurt at the end. Maybe they had the intention of bringing her back in that way, but they really are paying attention to what the fans are saying. You can tell by the plot lines. I mean, just referencing that YouTube video where they called Daniel the bully, you know, you could tell. But so I think maybe they decided, well, we don't want to be too predictable, so we'll just tease them with that and then do it another way. And I think the fact that they have this tease in here means it probably is going to happen, because if they keep teasing us and it's not going to happen, then they're mean.
Jerks.
I completely forgot about that. Steve, that's a good point. Yeah, I didn't realize that was the whole tie-in. I don't know why I didn't think that, but yeah, not one way or the other.
You mean that those two are kind of the same, kind of related, or the part about the surgeon maybe being Allie?
Right. The part about the surgeon being Allie. I still think she's going to show up, though. She has
me
to.
Too. Yeah, yeah.
I would hope so, but
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, would they keep taunting us like that if they weren't going to deliver ultimately? Right. That would just be cruel.
Yeah,
it'll be the last scene of the last episode, just like they did last season with the phone, the friend request thing. It'll be just 1 second at the very end. She'll show up, and you'll be like,
oh. And then she'll get hit by bus.
Yeah. Then the show's canceled.
Whoops.
I feel like they almost have to deliver now. I mean, I don't know what will happen, but it's like, you can't do that to us and then not deliver.
So yeah.
We'll see.
We got to take a stand.
Yeah.
Rima, what's your number three?
Well, my number three is Kimiko. I was thrilled to see her, and I'm so glad that they brought her back and that they were able to get her. Because my understanding is she hasn't, I don't know if she's done a lot throughout the years and other jobs or not, but I think it took a little convincing for her, you know, to kind of come back, and I'm glad to see that they got her. I was really happy to see that she's happy in life, you know, that when Daniel finds her, you know, she seems to be happy. She's in a good place. She seems fulfilled. She got to live out her dream. She joined that dance company that she wanted to do, that, you know, she talked about in Karate Kid, that's, you know, when they were having those conversations with each other about what they wanted from life. And that's what she wanted to do. And she got to go do that. She got to travel the world and see some great places and have some great experiences. Yeah. See the cranberries in London, which was her, you know, favorite part, which I thought was adorable, by the way. Yeah. You kind of get that little touch of the teenager that Kimiko was from Karate Kid too, which was, I thought, really sweet. And so I'm glad they threw that in there. So it was good to see her. She's clearly aged very well. Her and Ralph Macchio look almost exactly the same.
She still has that beautiful smile that just melts your heart.
Doesn't that just make you sick?
She's so beautiful. She is. She's gorgeous. And that smile did just light you up when they kept showing the flashbacks from Karate Kid 2. I mean, she's just a sweet, beautiful person. And I was really happy to see that she seems to be happy with where she is in life. And she seems content, you know, when Daniel's talking to her about, you know what, you're going to tell me some guy didn't try to put a ring on that finger. And she's like, well, you know, if you tried, but, you know, they never fought to the death for me. And I
loved that. I thought that was really, really touching.
I know. And I thought, well, that's true. And I thought, gosh, there's really a spark between them. You know,
yeah. Is she going to steal him away from Amanda?
Yeah.
I mean,
see, I thought it was really nice that they can have a deep connection, even though they used to be lovers, because now he has this family. And I thought that's kind of where they were going with it. Like, obviously Daniel's off the market, but then when they touched hands when they were drinking, I'm like, where are they going with this?
Yeah. And then they got interrupted.
I mean, I'm not rooting for something like that to happen or anything.
It doesn't seem like
it
would really fit, would it?
I don't think Daniel's
character, like,
no.
No, I don't think it would fit with Daniel's character. He's certainly honorable, and I don't see him doing something like that, but it wouldn't be true to, you know, to deny the spark that was between them and the potential of something happening between them. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know. I like Amanda. I really do. I enjoy her character. I think she's great. I think she has great lines, but
maybe she'll end up with Johnny.
I don't know. I just, when I look at her and Daniel, I see them almost more like roommates. I don't see a lot of chemistry between them, because she's always kind of being there to, like,
she's
always
the
being
the
she's the one there scolding him all the time and telling him to be reasonable and do things that make sense, and don't open a dojo when you have a job to hold down. Don't, you know, let a teenager move into the house and start
and not preparing special tea ceremonies for him or anything like that.
Yeah, but there was a real chemistry between him and Kimiko. I mean, when you, especially when you see those flashbacks, you know, and they broke up because, well, I mean, she was in Japan and he was going back to the States, and there was no way to stay in contact. There wasn't the internet and like Zoom and trying to maintain a long distance relationship. They didn't break up because they didn't care for for each other. It was the circumstances in life.
Yeah, so, that quick line, I think you guys talked about it when you covered Karate Kid 3. There's that quick line, I think, at the beginning.
Went to a dance school.
Yeah, that she joined the dance school in Japan instead of coming to California. So
yeah, at least she didn't wreck his car like Allie.
I see, and I see more chemistry. I mean, I love Allie, so don't get me wrong. I think, you know, Daniel and Allie, they were, you know, super cute together, but, you know, I see more chemistry between him and Kimiko than I do him and Allie.
One thing, Tamla Tamita actually has been acting steadily in TV and movies since this.
Oh, that's excellent.
And she's mentioned, like, hey, tell them I'm, you know, she seemed really interested in being back on the show. Awesome. So I think she was actually probably stoked.
I think she's been, like, the same character in, like, several of the Law and Order shows. Yeah. Like, she's a medical examiner or something like that. And so she's, like, been in several of those, if I remember.
She was in, like, Star Trek and Joy Luck Club was a big movie she was in, but that was a while back.
Oh, I'm glad to hear she's been working. Mm. So, yeah. Anyway, that's
cool.
That's my number three.
Rich?
Mine too. Mine is they say Kumiko, right? Or Kimiko? I want to say Kimiko, but it's Kumiko, huh?
I think it's Kumiko, with the emphasis on the first syllable.
Well, first of all, I could just watch and listen to her all day long. She's hot. Right? And then, you know, and then of course the writers did a really good job at keeping things platonic, and they really let the actors themselves create the underlying sexual tension, with how they were looking at each other and giggling and posturing and stuff like that. So I thought it was just all around great scenes when those two were together, like you were saying, Rima with the chemistry. And I started to get a little nervous when Kumiko and Daniel were reading the love letters. I'm like, man, that's looking like a pretty romantic setting. And they're talking about love.
It's like I'll be zen.
Family. Yeah. And they're talking
at her house.
Yeah. I'm like, that's pillow talk, baby.
But I feel like I don't really, I think it could go that way. But to me, it was just a really touching moment between two old friends. And there is chemistry there, but they weren't really going that way with it, I felt. And they were kind of flirting a little, like when she said no one fought to the death for me. But that moment, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, was just so pure as far as just them. I think even the actors, they were crying because they were remembering Pat Morita, or they were just feeding off each other's energy, but it just felt so authentic.
Yeah, it's very sentimental. But you know, that's when your emotions are running high, and then
next thing you know,
things happen. But then I got nervous the second time, like you said, Jay, when they were in the bar and they touched hands, and that look on Kumiko's face,
fucking chosen person.
Oh no,
always has to ruin everything. God, I was surprised there wasn't a storm suddenly. We gotta go.
But I do like Amanda also, so I don't know where they're going with this either, and I don't really want to see the whole fantasy of the show go down that road. It's a little bit too real, to be honest with you. You know what, though? I'm thinking it does bring up an interesting thought. What if it does? I mean, what if Daniel and Johnny switch places? What if Daniel gets, like, divorced, loses his dealership, and becomes destitute like Johnny is now, while Johnny somehow becomes successful and finds love?
I think I'd see Amanda more with a noosh than I think Johnny.
I don't want to see that, Rich. He's, like, joining that homeless woman that always flirts with Johnny, like Daniel's out there all washed up.
Yeah,
begging for money.
He'd be way out of his element, that's for sure.
Goldilocks. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay, my number three is also Kumiko, who I loved seeing, and glad Tamla Tamita could come back. And that moment in particular where they're sitting there in Aunt Yukie's beautiful home, and she's reading, well, you could think it's a little intrusive that she's reading these love letters, but I think Miyagi would be okay with it.
They've been gone a while, and I don't know, I thought about that too. I was like, gosh, it seems a little like an invasion of privacy.
As long as it didn't get like too too, too intimate. Racy. Like yeah, my mother yeah. recently sent a text to somebody she thought was a guy she was flirting with, but accidentally to me. And it was something I did not want to read. Oh. And I'm not going to repeat it either. But I was just like, God damn it. I'm like, Mom, wrong person.
Stuff you can't unsee.
No. Delete text.
Well, and I get the feeling like even that bartender said that was a very it was a very Japanese thing to keep them alive that way. So I don't, yeah. I don't it didn't come it's off to fine. Me as intrusive or anything like or you know breaking yeah. their privacy.
And so I'm going to read what the first one just said. Ever since we were little, when you smiled at me so shy, I've loved you. One good thing came out of our time apart. I got to fall in love with you twice in one lifetime. That's so sweet. And then, well, I'm like, but why didn't you like get together then? But anyways, the second one, it's Daniel finds a letter written the week that Mr. Miyagi died. I'm not going to be able to read this without getting a little choked up. My sweetheart, Yukie, I'm sorry. It's been a long time since my last letter. I'm so happy to hear that Kanizakura is in good health. He's like, who's that? Oh, it's the Okinawan cherry blossom, which he smiles at, of course. Miyagi would care about the trees. He continues, I'm so sorry to tell you that I'm back in the hospital, which I don't think we knew, but apparently he was in the hospital and he knew he was going to die probably. He says, please do not worry. There's nothing to do except watch TV and think. Think about family. Think about us. Think about where I have been. Think about where I am going. In life, I've always looked for signs to show me the right way, but I got lost until I met Daniel-san. His kind heart, strong chi, and loyalty and love for those around him is a guiding light to me. I'm very proud for the man he has become, even though he still has a hard head. I never thought I would have a family again. Daniel-san has welcomed me into his family, and he has passed on what I teach him in Miyagi-Do to his daughter. Samantha makes me feel like I'm her grandfather in life. Oh, in life, we'll always lose our way, but it is people, not the signs, that guide us back to the right path. Do you like that, Yukie? I heard that in a car commercial. Love, Nariyoshi Miyagi. And I love it because, you know, Daniel mentions he's the same age as Miyagi was when he first met him. And that's so appropriate for this show, which has people switching places and recontextualizes thing. And now Daniel's the teacher. But since season one, Daniel has said he goes to Miyagi's grave. You always seem like you were so solid and knew exactly what to say or whatever he said. And I'm so confused and unsure. And now he learns that actually he helped guide Miyagi.
Yeah.
That he, sorry.
No, it's all right.
You know that he that Miyagi was lost, and that totally makes sense because Miyagi, we learned, lost his wife and child in childbirth, and before that he had to leave his homeland and lost the love of his life and went to this foreign place and then lost his wife and child and ended up as this handyman who was kind of all on his own, you know. And so thinking back, it's like, oh, now I can see how meeting this kid would bring purpose to your life and the feeling of family and just the nice things he says about Daniel, the strong chi and the loyalty and all that. It just really touched me so much, more than anything has in this show so far. And you could tell it really touched the two actors, like I've mentioned before, too. So it's just a really special moment.
Yeah, he found his center with Daniel. I was happy to hear, too, that he got to know Samantha. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, because I don't know that they were clear on the timeline of when Mr. Miyagi died and, you know, where Daniel was at in life at that time. So it was really nice to know that he got to know Samantha in some capacity. Mm-hmm. It was nice. It was touching.
And that was my make me cry. Favorite part. Sorry. But the other stuff we've talked about was great, too. I thought it was a little, I don't know if she was, how serious she was when she said she'd never been with anyone because no one ever fought to the death with her. It was sweet, but I also thought, oh, you never met anyone. And were you really like, that's almost sad. Like, oh, maybe you'd been better off if you hadn't met Daniel, if he was that big in your mind that no one could ever measure up. Like, that's not fair. You know, Daniel found somebody. So I felt almost a little bit sad for her in that regard.
Yeah, I had that question. I had that question in my notes to ask everybody is do you think that it would have been better, worse, or just different if they showed us that she had moved on kind of like Daniel? Do you think yeah. she never really moved past Daniel, or she's just content being single? I mean, that's possible too.
I don't know how serious she was, but if she was serious, it sounds like she never moved past him because no one yeah. ever measured up.
I wouldn't want to believe that. That makes it a little bit sadder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, maybe that was just a sort of flirtatious thing to say. And then what else? We learned Yukie passed. We learned, about her dance experience.
I was always sad for Mr. Miyagi and Yukie never getting back together. I'm like, why? Like, about it when we covered Karate Kid 2. It's like, why didn't he just stay?
Right.
You know, he just stayed, or why didn't he go back after
maybe
he
it was Daniel's fault
and then go back?
Miyagi thought he had to be there to help guide Daniel.
I know. And I was like, dang it, this, you know, live your life. You have one life. Go back to Okinawa and you know, you this village is your home and those are your people. And you've been reunited with the love of your life and you guys are older now. So you've got a limited, you know, amount of time. And then they just end up just exchanging these letters. And that makes me sad. I mean, I'm glad that they somehow carried on, but that makes me sad.
Man, yeah. Daniel messes up everybody he meets.
It's like the Rick Grimes of Cobra Kai.
He comes into people's lives and screws them up.
Stay away from that guy. Jeez.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Get everything for your next project at Menards. Tackle tough jobs with Loctite Power Grab. This all-purpose construction adhesive is easy to use and bonds to a variety of materials. Plus, it's high strength, paintable, and reduces the need for clamping with zero-second instant grab. Save big money on Loctite Power Grab at Menards and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Okay, let's move on to number two, Steve.
So my number two, we already talked a little bit about it, so I'm going to jump down to one of my notes. Just part of my number two was Tomie Village. But most of it was about Kumiko, and I like Jersey Mike's better than Subway. My number two I'll change to the only thing that really kind of bothered me, and now is escaping me if it was in the third episode or the fourth episode, is there's no way that those kids would leave that kid alone with $1,000 in an envelope to go.
Kid.
Yeah, the littlest one. And I know you guys have asked this question. I know it's a story thing, but where are the adults? There was a news crew there. She said on TV that they had almost $1,000. You know, on TV.
Why would
she
you
said
say
it.
That?
Right.
Exactly. And that's the only thing that really bothered me because I'm like, where are the adults and why is this kid with this all by himself here? You know,
are you talking about the car wash?
Yeah. The car wash. What is he going to do with that money? Was he just going to take it straight to the hospital? He's got to put it in a bank.
It's funny that it was the smallest kid. I love that.
Yeah, exactly.
The littlest kid.
Is it because it was the Asian kid? Is that stereotyping? I don't know.
I love that Sam was like, a right circle, left circle, and they were all doing it too in the background. It's like they're always in training. And I love that when that one guy comes up and is hoping for a sexy car wash and he gets the big fat dude rubbing his belly on the
windshield. That sucked.
You want a washer? Washing
grab the money out of his hand.
Just grabs
the money really quick. And I was like, dang, that guy got a sour deal.
Sure did.
Hilarious.
You know, I mean, I guess it was they needed it for the story element to get them back into training.
Yeah, it's fine. And I mean, stuff. Dude, if you're gonna have a scene where a pastor like leg sweeps a guy right in his, it's a little church. Over the top sometime, but I love
it. Yeah,
no, kick ass for the Lord.
That was the only moment that really kind of I was like, come on, you know.
Yeah, that was a good scene. And then Hawk and Mitch show up and they're like, this is crazy. How dare they be nice people?
Yeah, exactly.
How dare them try to rectify, you know? And do something nice for Miguel.
Redeem themselves and yeah.
Okay, Rima.
Well, one thing that kind of bummed me out in the show this week was how Johnny, again, didn't show up for Robbie.
Yeah.
A little bit of a bummer. We saw that in like the...
You can pray in the car on the way.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's that.
That's why he stayed, because Grandma was like, we need you here to pray for Miguel. I'm like, just tell her I'll be back tomorrow. And I think that was a little contrived just to keep up the tension between Robbie and Johnny.
Exactly, and that's what I have in my notes, is it just seemed like a way to keep that tension between them. And that's what I kind of meant, where it seems like they're kind of dragging things out in that one episode just a little bit, because they're keeping that tension. And like you said, there's no reason why he couldn't have been like, you know what, I need to go. If he had said, I need to go see my son, I think that would have, you know, because I feel like they're not communicating. I saw that a little bit with Johnny in this in these two episodes, where I bet if you said, you know what, I'll come right back, I need to go see my son, be back in a couple of hours, and still be supportive and be there to, you know, pray and whatever, you know, for Miguel, and to kind of be there in a supportive way. So it wasn't very realistic. And he did it again when he was in that job interview, when, you know, the guy's asking about, he's like, well, I noticed you kept that, you know, that part blank about any prior offenses and stuff. And he's like, so tell me a little bit about that. And he's really hesitant. And he's like, it's okay, we're just a couple of guys talking, no big deal. So he decides to be honest and straightforward and like, okay, yeah, I got public intox and, you know, destruction of, you know,
property. Assaulting a minor, then, actually, with several minors technically.
I know. And then he's like, assaulting a minor. Jerks. And I'm like, dude, if maybe you had explained that these minors were beating up this kid, then that you, like.
It was hilarious.
It was hilarious, but it was like, then that totally ruined that, you know, that interview. I mean,
it's very,
he's like, so when do we start, boss? Like,
and then he's back in his car going, unstable, you're unstable.
Yeah, the guy even gave him a lead in. He was like, say, what are we talking about here? DUI?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah, DUI. Most
recently, yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Well, I mean, I think this show very much structurally is like a soap opera. And a lot of times soaps do that even worse, where they have people acting dumb ways just to keep the tension going.
Yeah.
And so I did definitely notice the one about Robbie, like, oh, come on, just tell him you have to leave. But yeah, you're right.
Well, and like Rich, you pointed that out last week with the whole doctor conversation in front of the open blinds of the window. That's totally a soap opera thing. Or,
exactly.
You know.
Yeah. Yes. So. Yeah.
And they need to do stuff like, because they know their jobs as storytellers is to keep that tension going. Because if Robbie and Johnny are just like, I love you, Dad, I love you too, son, and that's it, then there's
realistic.
Nowhere to go with it. And so they have to find a way to do it that's as believable as possible, and sometimes they don't quite measure up.
Right. Well, and I mean, it wouldn't be realistic if all of a sudden they just all of a sudden, you know, Robbie forgave Johnny, you know, for his past behaviors. I mean, that wouldn't be realistic either. It does take time to rebuild that, and I think we're getting there, but it was just like this other stumbling block and hurdle to get over to finally get on that path.
Yeah, and then it's like cool to see Johnny go to the, like, where Robbie's giving food to the homeless for his community service, and be like, I'm just gonna sit here until you're done, you know. That's like, yay, Johnny. So then you get that good feeling.
Yeah, it was a good payoff.
Until he fucks it all up by saying, you're the one that put Miguel in the hospital.
Yeah.
He had to open his mouth and blah.
Their little tiff ends up spilling all the soup onto the floor, too. I was like, heartbroken for all the homeless people that were there for a free meal that they're not going to get now.
Hungry people.
And that scene, by the way, because you had the bad boy juvie guys in the background chuckling at him. I don't know if it was intentional, but it kind of reminded me of when Daniel spilled all the red sauce all over himself at the country club and people were laughing at him.
Oh, similar. Good callback.
Except if only Robbie would have spilled it all over his chest, then it totally would have been the same thing.
Can't mess up that nice new haircut, though.
Okay, Rich.
Oh, sorry, we're on me.
Number two.
I have here is about the writers working in some social behavior references that I noticed. I think it was Moon said she was a sex-positive feminist.
Yeah.
Which was a movement. I had to look it up. It's a movement that started in the 80s. Although after reading the description, I don't think it's really a new was or is a new equality ideology. I think before the 80s, sex positive feminists were just called hippies, but
they just rephrased it a little.
Yeah. That makes sense. And they had to say something like that to make it okay that they were showing these teens in a scene that's typically about babes with car wash and wet t-shirts and all this.
And the bikinis.
Yeah.
Gosh.
And then Johnny says to Sid, start one of those hash brown referencing the Me Too movement. Yeah.
I love it. Send it to the internet.
And the last one I caught. Yeah.
Send it to the internet.
The last one I caught was, what's her name? The blonde girl? The mean girl?
Yasmin.
She said, my parents may not have to pay for my A this time. Referencing the college scandals. And so I was there's some social behavior references there, but I noticed they haven't. Was this filmed? It was probably filmed before the pandemic, right?
I think it's been on the shelf for a while.
It was done, while it was still, they thought they were going to be on YouTube still.
Mm-hmm.
Then they had to delay. Pretty hard to work into the show, too, because then you wouldn't be able to fight, right?
Yeah. It would
6 feet.
I can't see them trying to work that in on this show, even though the next season 4, I think, will have been filmed during the pandemic.
Yeah. So that was cool. I found all that stuff in there to be humorous, let's say.
Well, I got some funny lines, so that goes into my number 2. It's my turn, right? Wait. First, Steve, you mentioned you like Jersey Mike's better than Subway. I didn't get that.
That was when he's in Tomy Village, the Mega Mall.
Oh.
She says we had a Subway, but now we have a Jersey Mike's.
Oh,
that's Jersey Mike's is another sandwich shop. I don't know if they've got them out in West Coast.
I didn't look it up, so thanks for clarifying. I was like, "What's a Jersey?"
Yeah, sorry. Jersey Mike's is like it's like another sandwich shop, kind of like Subway, but
they had
better.
Like Gap and
they had American Eagle, Forever 21,
KFC. Okay, so Bobby preaching in church, forgiveness of thyself, this is probably your toughest battle, but listen, if God can forgive, then so can you. Drunk Johnny, bullshit. What about that time in Reno with those soccer moms at the Hyatt? God forgive any of us for that?
Kind of makes you want to know what happened.
Can we get that story, please?
I think we can figure it out.
And I had one from that scene written down where Johnny says, so your Wang can still get Tang. Nice.
He goes, how many times do I have to tell you I'm not a priest?
Right.
I like that it opens on that and then ends with him leg sweeping Johnny. And then the next scene, everything is fine. And Johnny is pointing at some coffee cake. I still don't understand how they get the coffee in the cake.
Yeah. Did you see the pile of rubbish underneath him on the carpet too, where he was eating the whole time?
No.
Yeah. He spilled all his food on the ground somehow. I don't know why he did that.
That's hilarious. I like that, Bobby, his name's Bobby Brown. He came back and he's playing a role of a pastor and a guiding figure. There's a lot of guiding figures in this show. Some are big, like Daniel Canby and even Johnny, but even like the bartender at the Okinawa bar who convinced Daniel to go back to Okinawa basically. Or on the beach last season, I think there was a fisherman that looked kind of like Miyagi because he had those tan things. And I forget what he said, but they find wisdom in places all around because it fits in with that theme of the importance of good role models and stuff.
Yeah, I like that Bobby was helping Johnny. That was cool. And you know that line he said, you don't do the right thing because it always works out. You do the right thing because it's the right thing to do.
That makes a lot of sense, he's saying that
because he keeps trying to help Johnny, but doesn't really seem to be working out.
But I love it because Johnny, it feels just like Miguel did when he was like, I did what you said. Why did this happen? And that's kind of what he says to Bobby. I taught them mercy. You know, I tried to be a better person and everything went to hell. And that's when he said, but you just said you do the right thing because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Tom Cole comes in, Daniel's competition. I heard sales weren't going well over there. I guess that happens when you put kids in comas. Am I right? And Daniel looks over at Anoush, who now works for Tom. Really, Anoush, you walk in with this guy and let him talk to me like that? Anoush is like, that's just how he talks. You get used to it. I just thought that was kind of funny. Mm-hmm. And that Daniel says, it wasn't my idea to start a dealership. I thought car salesmen were sleazy. And Louis makes the jack off motion. That's such a bullshit stereotype. Not always, dude. Daniel gives Anoush's job back, and then Anoush is like calling Tom Cole a douchebag and everything. And then Amanda.
Douche clown.
Douche clown.
He's not a complete douche clown, and he knows my name.
Then Amanda's like, well, there's no turning back now. This plan better work. And Anoush is like, wait, I thought this was a sure thing. This isn't a sure thing. Oh. I like that. Yeah, Johnny interviewing for the job. Guy asking about prior arrests, just a formality. No one's perfect. Johnny's like, all right, well, most recently I was arrested for public intoxication, assault and battery, and willful destruction of property, I think they said. Not necessarily in that order. And a year ago I was arrested for assaulting a minor. A minor? Technically multiple minors. Those kids were real pricks. You know, it feels really good to talk about this. I was like, when you lay it all out like that, it does sound pretty bad. And then he's looking at want ads, and some are circled and crossed out like he'd probably had failed interviews with them. Facilities coordinator, commercial fire sprinkler fitter. And then one is circled with a question mark, and it says, dancer, seeking female dancers 18 to 30 years old. Start ASAP. Must be fun. Experience a plus, but not necessary. Cash paid daily. Please email or text 3 clear full body pics and how soon you're available. Why does he have a question mark? Yeah.
The source of hot babes.
Yeah. He's like, oh. And then the last one is when Sam gets double detention and she's all like, this is bullshit. And she hits the cabinet or the locker and storms off. And then Dimitri's standing there and he just goes, I don't know her that well. To the teacher. Like, you sleep. Goober.
I'm liking Dimitri a lot more this season.
Yeah. I mean, I keep wondering if, or I was sort of wondering this episode if they're going to try to make a Yasmin Dimitri thing work. But if they do, I don't think I would buy it. He's just too damn geeky.
Yeah. And there at the soccer field, she was standing next to that guy. Remember who kind of, when Hawk ran by, the guy kind of backed off a little bit because he didn't want Hawk to see him standing right next to her.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
And that's when Dimitri ran up and goes, you know, she really did love you. And you,
oh, that was Moon.
Oh, talking about
Moon. Oh, that was Moon.
Talking about Jasmine because she was like dissing Dimitri in the cafeteria. And you're goes, hey, your social status is going down. Mine's right. going up. Maybe we should paradigm. Meet the middle.
The sexual Venn diagram. He said, right. Okay.
And she's like, ugh. But then he shows her the awesome Lego volcano thing. And she's like, oh, maybe I don't have to pay for an A. And I'm like, are they trying to get them like together? I hope not.
Okay. I
feel like
not.
It wouldn't work.
I don't want them to.
I hate when shows do that. They put too geeky of a guy with too hot of a girl, and you're like, no, come on.
Yeah, I don't think that would work, but I it would be kind of cool to see them more of friends, maybe.
Yeah,
that she gets off her high horse and gets a stick out of her ass, maybe, and you know.
Maybe, yeah. Seems like something the show would do.
Yeah.
Okay, Steve, number one.
Okay, so my number one is that whole, and I put it in quotes, the fight on the soccer field. I thought was really great the way they did it. You know, with like that moment where Sam dodges and those two guys run into each other, and they're trying to make it look like soccer moves, but they're actually just kicking the shit out of each other.
Ball in each other's faces. And stuff.
Yeah. Then, of course, later on, we see the Cobra Kai's kind of get released. It was very Eddie Haskell, for those that remember.
Yes.
To Beaver. Very Eddie Haskell.
Hawk is very much an Eddie Haskell. Even in the cafeteria when Sam was like getting in his, he was taunting her. And then the teacher comes up and like, is she getting in your personal space? Yes, very much.
Yes. And just that whole thing was really, I thought it was really done well. And both sides kind of, you know, went at each other. Cause even Hawk is like, wait, you know, Sensei said to fight smarter. And so we see even some of them get kind of kicking the ball and getting their own licks in. So I thought it was kind of cool.
And then finally they're like, okay, you're obviously just fighting out here.
The coach or whoever that will be is, you know, limit your physical contact.
Everybody to the principal's office. That kind of leads into my number one is about Kreese. You know, last week I was saying on our podcast last week, I wasn't really too keen on learning more about Kreese. You know, I was happy just to have him be the bad guy. But, and we talked about it. So I talked about his background role and the role his character has in the series. So this week, surprisingly. I was a little more aware of what was going on with him and what he was doing in the background. You know, he was doing some pretty sneaky shit in the background in these two episodes. His narrative about fighting smarter, not harder, like you just said, you know, shows up a few times in the episode, especially when the Cobra Kai kids are in the cafeteria and just like in real life, they're totally manipulating the positive behavioral support system, PBS, that's what they call them in the schools, to their advantages. That was hilarious. And then, did Sam enter your personal bubble without your consent?
And Hawk, he was talking about microaggressions and macroaggressions and everything.
Yeah, we should stop the aggression, micro and micro. And he tries to, and then Kreese, you know, shows up at the bar. He tries to manipulate Johnny again, and we see him show up at Juvie after that to talk with Robbie. So it's like, hey, this dude is up to no good, bruh. So yep. I found him to be more interesting in these two episodes than I did in the first two episodes, but mostly because I think we just talked about it.
When that's cool. That means the podcast helped, which I'm always happy about.
It always does.
When Kreese confronted Johnny in the bar and said, you know, hey, once your boy gets up off his feet, we can train him. And Johnny's like, you keep away from Miguel or I'll kill you or whatever. And then Kreese showed up to talk to Robbie. I've been wondering for a long time if those two will switch dojos. And this sort of makes me feel like maybe that's coming. You know, Robbie's going to be a Cobra Kai. And I'd love to see Daniel and Johnny training Miguel together or something like that. Or Daniel training Miguel. So that
Cool. It does feel like there's a switch. It could it could be the kids. It could be two of the adults. It could be a relationship. Yeah, it certainly feels like there's a switch coming up, huh?
Wife swapping.
Yeah.
Rima, what's your number one?
Chosen. Yeah, not.
That's the son.
He almost sounded like his uncle there for a minute. Soto, almost. which I think, Rich, you did a really good impression when we covered Karate Kid 2 that time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's not a lot to say, but it was just, you know, like you said earlier, Jason, it was like, oh, here he comes, ruining the moment again. There's this, you know, sweet little moment between Daniel and Kumiko, and it's like, ah! Here he is again, and then immediately goes into the flashbacks from Karate Kid 2, you know, of that attention is, I feel, not a heavy enough word for what, because it was...
They really amped it up from 1 to 2. Yeah. 1 was a school bully thing. Exactly. Tournament, and 2 is fight to the death.
Yeah, like terror of your honor. He really, I mean, I know Johnny wanted to hurt Daniel in Karate Kid, the first Karate Kid movie, but Chosen was, that was like on a whole different level that...
kill him.
Yeah, that whole threat between them and the seriousness of it was definitely a lot different. So I'm interested to see what we're going to get from Chosen. What kind of guy is he now? You know, I don't know. I haven't watched ahead. So I just saw there at the end, but I'm like, did he kind of turn a little bit? You know, because we saw Soto at the end of Karate Kid 2.
Sato, sorry.
I think I kept saying that in the last one too. Sorry. Been a while since I watched it. So I'm curious to see if he's kind of turned a little bit like his uncle, and, you know, as he's aged and went through the years, if he's kind of, you know, left some behind that youthful vengeance ideas that he had and tried to kill someone in a death match. Right. But
he just walks in. He's like, hey, what's up, DL? Let me buy you a drink.
Yeah.
I remember you. Remember that fight we had?
You
disgraced me and besmirched my honor.
Well, isn't that supposed to be a thing with guys? It's like they kind of fight and they get over it and they're just like having shots and just like, oh, it's all good, you know?
Yeah.
Well, some guys I still don't ever want to see again. But it's a good question. I mean, the way he spoke, Daniel-san, and you see the flashbacks of him trying to kill Daniel-san. But this show surprises us, and they recontextualize things, and they have role reversals. So I would almost be disappointed if it was just a straightforward older version of himself. I want to see some kind of a twist on Chosen.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, they're not spring chickens. They can't move like they used to, right?
Maybe he's like a kindergarten teacher.
Got to play it a little smarter now, yeah?
Yeah, we'll see. I can't wait to watch as soon as this is done. It's been a torture of a week.
God damn it. It was so difficult. I think we say this, or you guys have to know, like, with the podcast I listen to and I send voicemails to, like, I feel like I'm there with you guys. So like, even when I'm driving my car and you guys ask a question, I'll like answer it in my car. Like,
as if I'm actually, Steve, you are.
Yeah, it's a big community.
We say it almost every week.
That, yeah, we're in this together.
It's so difficult to not go to the next one. Like when I watched these the first time, that was like, I could just sneak it in. Nobody will know. I just won't talk about the next one, you know? But yeah. I was like, well, no.
I know a lot of people have said, I tried to wait, but I just couldn't. And I've seen that. So you're, it's hard. Yeah. Like if I was just listening, I wouldn't be able to. If I wasn't podcasting about it, I probably would just watch them all.
Oh, yeah, totally. Same for me. I would just do it out of habit, probably.
Yeah. It's like I blew through The Flight Attendant all eight or nine episodes, whatever it was, yesterday. Just
that was good.
That's right. See, that's what makes it a little bit easier. I think I was talking to someone else about that, because they were talking about the challenges, since we cover a lot of Netflix shows on Strange Indeed. And, you know, we do a weekly watch and cover each and don't watch ahead. And I was like, well, I was like, it is hard. You know, I'm not going to say it's easy, but what helps it is that there's so much good TV. You know, there's a lot of fun things to watch. And, you know, it's easy if I can, you know, turn that off after I've watched whatever episode I'm supposed to watch. Instead of going to the next one, I can say, well, no, I'm going to switch over to this show that I want to watch. So it helps kind of get my mind off of it. There's a lot of good TV. There's a lot of good things to watch. If this were years and years ago, it might be a little bit different, but we're in a pretty good place with a lot of good TV. So it helps. It helps ease the pain. A little bit.
Years ago, we would have to wait.
Yeah.
Have no choice.
I know, every week, like when Lost was on air, you had to wait.
I've been playing, this is a bit of an aside, sorry, but I've been playing Half-Life Alyx in VR with my Quest, and it's incredible. I recommend. I know, Rima, you have a Quest. Richard, do you have one? Steve?
No, I don't have any VR. Kind of VR kind of stuff.
So
no.
Good. It's freaky as hell. It's the best VR game ever made.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, my number one is callbacks from movies and also previously in the series. I mentioned the left circle, right circle thing. That was cute. Cobra Kai has motorcycles again. Have we seen them on motorcycles?
No, I thought that was the same thing.
That was a new thing. I thought,
they're kind of tiny.
Yeah.
The dirt bikes.
Yeah, I guess this is. Yeah, yeah. The shelter where Robbie's serving food for his community service, Johnny runs into that same homeless woman that he used to argue with at the Quick Mart.
Mm-hmm.
Did we see her in season two at all, or was she just season one?
I don't know. I think we might have seen her once, but I'm not positive. She's like, I like how she's aggressive and insulting, but also kind of flirty.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's talking to me, Goldilocks. And then he goes, she's like, hey, pretty boy. And then he gives her the soup. Here, take it, vulture. In the cafeteria, Hawk is bouncing the soccer ball on his knee. He goes, hey, 22 in a row, new record. That's like Daniel. That's how he flirted with Allie. Mm-hmm. How many times could you do that? But then, of course, because he's the bully, the soccer ball ends up going right through poor Dimitri's awesome Lego volcano.
Did that scene so well, because Dimitri's just talking about the fact that this is what the valley looked like. They think it looked like just before the asteroid hit it. And then as he says asteroid,
it was great timing. I'm glad you brought that up, because I thought that too, Steve.
I'm like, how did they get that? How many times did they have to do that to get that perfect?
Yeah, they cut it just perfect. Yeah, perfect timing.
The whole soccer situation where they're fighting and everything, that's a callback to the soccer scene in Karate Kid, mm-hmm. where Bobby tripped Daniel and started a fight. Even with the cheerleaders there, I think they're saying the same cheer in the background. Let's go, yes. Lions, go, I read fight, that win.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Dimitri says to Samantha, I wish we could do something about these cretins. And Sam goes, we can. That kind of reminded me of the Halloween shower thing with Allie. I'd love to see him get some of his own medicine. And Daniel says, what goes around comes around. It's a similar idea. In both cases, the good guy, quote unquote, goes and strikes back at the bully and ends up causing trouble for themselves. Daniel with his hose in the bathroom and Samantha just encouraging everybody to fight on the soccer field. After Dimitri trips Hawk and goes, I guess that's why they call it football. And the Cobra Kai act like they're going to fight Dimitri. Hawk puts up his hand and goes, remember what Sensei said, fight smart. That's just like in Karate Kid when Daniel made fun of all the Cobra Kai after they had injuries from being beat up by Miyagi, and Johnny starts towards Daniel and then Bobby goes, remember what Sensei said, we have to wait for the tournament. Mm. Tommy goes, must be take a worm for a walk week. And then Sam gets 2 weeks of rehabilitative detention and she slams her fist against the locker and goes, this school sucks, which is just like Daniel at the end of that soccer scene. And the coach says, get off the field. And he goes, this school sucks, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's headed down a bad path, isn't she?
Yeah. Yeah. And supposedly Daniel taught her all of Miyagi's lessons, but maybe she's not a good learner.
Maybe she learned some stuff from Daniel too, though.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Inherited the hothead. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Daniel tells the story of how he became a car dealer. And I kind of thought some of this, like he probably developed his love of cars from being exposed to Miyagi's old cars, but it was nice to hear the story and see that flashback of him and his mom push starting their station wagon. And he said it was a 47 Ford. We always heard it was a 48, but it's 47. And that was the best day of his life. And he's been in love with cars ever since. And that Miyagi is the one who pushed him into sales. We didn't know that. And that's a big major life decision. So it's kind of cool that Miyagi was involved.
What was that from season three when Miyagi opened up the bonsai tree store?
I think he's talking about Miyagi pushing him to become a car salesman.
Yeah. I think it was later. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in Karate Kid 3, they went into business together, but I think this is probably even after that, you know, that we haven't seen.
One of the things I loved about that scene, I know we talked about the chemistry between Amanda and Daniel, is if you watch, and I didn't notice it the first time, but the second time, in the background, you can see Amanda mouthing the same words that Daniel is saying. Like, she's heard this story before, and they kind of, I got the impression was that they kind of share the passion.
She says, I'm glad we built this together.
Yeah. And so, you know, I know as much as we said that there's not really chemistry, I think it can be there, you know, but that really touched me when I noticed her, you know, mouthing the same story in the background. I thought it was really, really cool.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't agree with that. I think they have chemistry. I mean, they feel like a couple who's been married for a while. So maybe some of that passion has died down a little, but you can feel the bond between them and they, you know, they get intimate and stuff. So I think they're a good couple.
That's why I cringed a little bit when he said that when Miyagi gave him that his first car, that was the best day of his life. I was like, ooh, careful what you say. You're married, dude. Right.
You had kids.
You had kids. You met your wife. Watch out.
It's like, man, I miss Mr. Miyagi every day. God, you keep talking about Mr. Miyagi. And then he goes on about how Miyagi told him, man who worked for passion always richer than man who worked for money. And he wanted to give people that same excitement that he got when he first got his first car. That was just a really nice moment. And it brings back that whole scene where Miyagi gave him the car and that he said, you're the best friend I've ever had. Which also is a callback in this scene with the bartender saying, you look happy there. He asked some question about the guy. Oh, he was the best friend I ever had. Oh, yeah. And then after that, when Amanda and Louis went to do inventory or whatever, and Daniel's looking over and sees one of his bonsai trees, and he remembers back to Miyagi, that scene of Miyagi teaching him how to cut the trees, and he's telling him, close your eyes, make a picture, basically imagine how you want the tree to look, then open your eyes and make it look like that. And then Daniel feels like he got an epiphany there. And I don't think saw this that scene quite the same way as I did now, where I see, oh, it's a metaphor for life. Just imagine your life the way you want it to be and then make it like that. I mean, it's kind of simple, but it was, I like that.
Yeah.
Daniel's like, I'm going to make it like the picture in my head. So he goes to Okinawa, which is where Karate Kid 2 took place. And that was filmed in Hawaii. I know you guys know that, but they actually filmed this in Okinawa, and I think this is the first time that Ralph Macchio has actually been to Okinawa.
Oh.
In the cab, Daniel says, take me to Tomie Village. In Karate Kid 2, they go to where Tomie Village was, and it turns out it's an Air Force base.
Yeah.
And I think part of the village had been taken over by the base, but the rest was still there because Miyagi's then pointing out places that he remembers from the past. But anyway, it's a similar dynamic here where they go to Tomie Village and it's a strip mall.
And there were soldiers in the background too.
Yeah.
If you looked closely.
Oh, here at the strip mall?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's still a base there.
So there's the Air Force base there.
Yeah, there's a base in Okinawa.
Yeah, okay. And they say that Sato did that to everything going economically, which sounds like the villagers were happy, so that's interesting. I guess Sato, though, I know the actor died, and I don't know if they've mentioned the character died, but we're not going to see him because the actor died. I got a couple more callbacks. I loved at the end in Okinawa when they show those ice blocks. Close up to it. And right away you think of Daniel chopping through the ice blocks in Karate Kid 2. But then it was clever camera placement because they're just like for drinks, ice for drinks. That was cool.
I thought that was great.
And then Chozen showing up at the end is an old character.
Daniel-san.
So that's it for my number one. What about any notes? Do you have any extra notes, Steve?
Yeah, I've got a couple here that we haven't already talked about. It was kind of funny, that whole Goomba conversation that Anoush and Louis have, where Vinny's, or Louis says, that's not your word, that's our word. And Anoush says, is it though? You know, I thought that was great. They were drinking 18-year Macallan Scotch. I wish I could afford 18-year Macallan Scotch. And the whole
did you watch Westworld?
Is it did they have that in Westworld also?
I think what's his name, the man in black, and Robert Ford were drinking that together in a bar. But since you just mentioned that, whiskey shows up in these two episodes a lot. There's that. There's drinking the whiskey with the Japanese executives. And then at the bar with Johnny, Kreese orders a Cuddy and Water, which is a whiskey. And at first I was like, oh, Daniel, it makes me feel weird to see him drinking. But then I'm like, well, that's also a callback because he may have been introduced to whiskey by Miyagi, who gave it to him on his 16th birthday and laughed at him when he coughed, you know?
Yeah.
So it's appropriate that it shows up a lot.
The very 80s prison movie, like the stuff that we're getting with Robbie in the juvenile detention, that's very 80s kind of prison movie stuff. Johnny trying to return the computer to the pawn shop. Did you plug it in? He told me it was wireless. And, is there anything else here? I just think I'm really glad that we saw Johnny kind of reject Kreese's deal or whatever he was trying to talk to him about, because I think it would betray kind of what Tommy and the other guys said to him about Kreese in season two if he goes back to Kreese at all.
I think
that would be against what it would disappoint me if the writers have the character go back to Kreese at any point.
Me too, but it is an interesting setup because Johnny's down and out and kind of lost and needs money. And Kreese is being smart and sly and trying to manipulate everybody. And he keeps thinking, you can tell by the way he acts, he's like, yeah, he'll be back. Don't worry. Just a matter of time. Mm-hmm. So you feel like that's a possibility, but I think you're right. I hope it doesn't happen.
Yeah. And was Johnny really going to try to sell the 93 van to the pawn shop?
Of course.
His kids stole it. And then Daniel told him, return that van to the dealership. So I think that's all I had that we didn't already discuss. So.
Awesome. Rima? Cool. Rich? Wait, what order are we going in? I forgot.
Go ahead, Rima. It's fine.
Okay. I only have a few. Jason, you mentioned, going back to Japan, or well, in the show, going back to Japan, but the film they were in Hawaii for, and apparently this was a one-day shoot. They flew to Japan, filmed it in one day, and turned right back around and came. So it wasn't like a vacation thing or a long process. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But I'm glad that they at least had like a legit reason to go back. We did watch the trailer, so we knew ahead of time that they were going back to Okinawa, or at least going back to Japan. So it wasn't a big shocker, but I was kind of like, oh gosh, how are they going to get us there? Is it going to make sense? Like, is it going to be on some kind of journey for Daniel to like find himself or something, you know, after this whole fallout that happened at the high school and he's lost, and which I guess in a way he kind of is, but that wasn't his purpose for going. I know that kind of ended up that way, you know, kind of, you know, meeting up with Kumiko and reading Miyagi's letter and stuff, and that kind of helped him, but it wasn't what got him there. So I'm glad that they kind of had a good reason to go there in the story, so that didn't disappoint.
Do you think Kumiko will come back with him, or will this be the last we see of her?
I think she better stay in Okinawa for the sake of his relationship.
For Daniel's
wife.
Marriage, yeah.
I don't think she'll be coming back.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't know if we'll see her again.
I think
again.
There'll be another episode or two of whatever Daniel's story is in Okinawa, though.
Yeah, I think they'll probably be there for, you know, another episode or two.
Settle with Chosen.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we got to be there at least to figure out
at least
what happens
one more, at least,
with,
yeah,
figure out what happens with him. But I think she should probably stay in Japan. is anyone missing Daniel's son?
Oh yeah, what about that?
I thought about that because I think Jason, you said last week that he is slated to come back in the. Remember in season two, he went off to like math camp or something like that in the first episode.
He came back at the end of season two, I think.
Oh, he came back at the very. Yeah, I just know that he went off to some kind of summer camp or something, yeah, and then came right back.
I just
we never.
He
really
needs to bring him back and have him be this like beefy, studly, like 18-year-old.
Yeah,
kid.
Instead of the little brat that he was the first.
Yeah.
But I think it's funny that he, you know, he had a kind of a heavy presence in the first season, and they kind of started. You saw a little less of him in the second season, and then so far, I mean, we're only in the fourth episode, but I'm like, we haven't heard, not only not seen him, but we haven't even heard him mentioned. Like, we haven't even said anything about him. Like, he doesn't even exist anymore. I find hilarious.
The writers clearly are not the type of writers that are like, okay, we need to find something to do for all the characters, because Aisha's not here, and characters who were not here in season two have come back now, so that's kind of cool. Like, they bring him back. But when it's the Daniel's son, then it's a little you can't just have him not exist anymore.
Yeah.
Well, right. We really haven't seen that much at Daniel's house in these, we've only been four episodes in, like you said. We really haven't seen much at his house. We've seen him at Miyagi's house with the training.
That's true.
So maybe that's their excuse for not, they've been to the dealership. And
I'm okay with it. You know, I don't miss that kid. I mean, unless he comes back a little bit, you know, nicer, I just thought it was funny. I was like, it's just kind of interesting that we haven't even heard him mentioned. It's fine to not, but it's like not even in passing in conversation. Have they even kind of mentioned him at all? So I just thought it was kind of funny. And then the product placement, which I feel like the show is always, they do a lot of in the show, but I just thought it was funny. Stevie mentioned the McKellen scotch. I was just like, wow, they're not even trying to hide it. Like, they have that label right in front of you. And when Daniel picks it up, he sets it down, and you can see his hand move ever so slightly to make sure that the label is facing the camera.
Like in Lost in Translation,
like they did in the 80s with Coca-Cola.
Yeah. And then,
we saw KFC and all those malls.
Yeah, when
we're sure to focus in on each one.
Exactly. See Baskin Robbins and Red Lobster, and there's, you know, KFC, and I see American Eagle and a Forever 21, and I'm like, wow, they're just not shy about product placement at all. So just wanted to kind of mention that. But the McKellen Scotch stood out for sure. And there was, I couldn't see the label, so I'm not sure what it was, but there was a Japanese whiskey as well that they were drinking. And I thought, yeah, and like I said, the label is high right up there on the camera. They're not like turning the bottle to see a bottle of whiskey. See the label.
So, they didn't make up a fake brand or anything. They did a real
like Morley cigarettes and X-Files. That was always a big thing. Right. Morley cigarettes. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's just a few of the notes that I had.
Cool.
Rich. So what happened to Tori too? Did I miss her? Was she not in these two episodes?
She was
here.
Last we saw, she was fell in line at Cobra Kai, and we didn't really get to see them in the dojo this time or anything. So
yeah, you're right. We didn't see her at all. She was mentioned when Miguel saw the scars on Sam's.
Mm-hmm. She's not at school because she got expelled. So school scenes, we won't see her.
No, she wouldn't be on the soccer team for sure, right?
Right. So
yeah. I just thought of that when you were talking about Daniel's son. It was good to see Ed Asner again.
Yes.
Man, 90 years old.
It's cool. I wonder, is he just out looking for work, or does he know someone? Or
no, dude, he's super busy. I looked him up on IMDb, and he's got like 409 credits, and he's still got like a whole bunch that are still in pre-production. I mean, wow. I don't think he's ever going to stop.
Man, Ed Asner has been old my entire life.
It's true.
That I'm old, he is still really old. The dude's like 91. He needs to be like just sitting in his house talking about Days with Mary Tyler Moore. What is he doing?
Was that scene just to remind us that Johnny had a bad upbringing, or because he steals the statue, and I guess we're meant to assume he sold that statue somehow?
Yes. Oh, totally.
Because then he brought a check to Miguel, and the pawn guy, who's a dick that he always ends up running into, said, "Bring me something valuable." So they didn't show this scene, but I assume he sold whatever that art piece was.
He kind of was almost alluding to the fact that you should just steal something, because he's like, "Well, what am I supposed to do?" And he's like, "You know, I don't have anything about it." And he's like, "Well, I suggest you find someone that does."
That's what pawn shops are full of, stolen shit.
Yeah. He kind of boldly does it. You think that Ed Asner would go, "Hey, what are you doing?" You know, but
it was probably won't even miss it at first. Probably take him a couple weeks.
But yeah, it did remind us. It was great to see Lou. What's his name?
Ed Asner.
I think Lou Grant. That's what I was thinking. Yeah. Ed Asner. And it just reminded us where Johnny came from, that he was bullied as a kid. And also, I don't know if we knew this before, but he dissed his father. He said, "You're a loser like your father. And at least I stayed around." So that was maybe just a little more color on Daniel's, background.
Right. I mean, we don't know who his biological father is, right?
I don't think we've ever heard anything about him until now, as far as I remember.
Yeah, we don't know anything about who his father was or what the circumstances. I mean, I'm guessing he somehow abandoned him.
Apparently he was a loser and didn't stick around.
Yeah, and then Johnny's mom married him, so.
Yep, now I feel more connected to Johnny.
Oh!
I got the same background.
Yeah. And then I think my last note was about in the Cobra Kai dojo. Where is it? When they were all training, and Kreese was telling him to knock the plant off of the pole.
Oh, yeah.
And then Hawk, kicks the pole. He says, "Yeah, fight harder, not smarter," and all that stuff. When he went around to each of the students, nobody was looking him in the eye except for Hawk. Hawk was looking right at Kreese in the eye. So I was like, okay, maybe Hawk's up there on his list, perhaps. Maybe not number one, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got potential.
There's clearly a respect level there.
And he did, but he looked also kind of dumb too, though.
Oh, there was a scene in the dojo. I don't think Tori was in that scene though, was she?
I don't know if they showed her. She might have been. Yeah, I don't remember seeing
her. Yeah.
Right.
But I also noticed in that scene that the kid with red hair is called Red.
Yeah. Kreese isn't, like, he's not very imaginative about his
not
in his nicknames.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Okay, I got a few notes. We didn't talk much about Robbie, but I did feel bad for him. Daniel sent him to juvie because he thought it would have a lighter sentence if he kind of turned himself in, and here he is getting the shit beat out of him by three guys or more. Like, oh, maybe that's really going to cement in Robbie's mind that Daniel's his enemy. Another reason why I feel like he might go ahead and go to Kreese. Cobra Kai.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that he might resent Daniel for
sending him to this hellhole.
Getting the cops sent there to rehab where he was with his mom. And
And I felt bad for him because he knows some karate, but it just wasn't enough.
It's hard situation. When there's 4-on-1. Yeah.
Let's see. Miguel sees the scar that Tori gave Sam. Man, it does seem like a Freddy Krueger thing. Those three deep scars. Yeah. And Miguel says, "I'm sorry about that." "Well, it's not your fault. It's her fault." And he goes, "Well, Tori's had a rough life. Her mom's sick." And Sam goes, "Everybody's got a sob story. That doesn't give you a right to be a bully." I like that because that's kind of a decent counterpoint to the whole what I always talk about gray area, and everybody has their own perspective. And if you knew where people come from, you would sympathize with them. The other side of that is, hey, that doesn't mean you have license to just trample over everybody. you got to take responsibility for yourself at some point.
Yeah. It was good to see that Miguel doesn't seem to blame Sam for anything that happened too. He still seems to care for both of them, for both Sam and Tori.
Yeah. Yep. And it was nice that Hawk showed up, you know, even though he's like the one of the bulliest of the bullies, he shows up, hey, bro. And it's like, oh, that's nice. The two buddies, you know, he's visiting his buddy in the hospital. And even that he stood up to him, to Sam, because he knows that Sam's boyfriend's the one who did this.
Yeah. And we keep talking about people visiting each other, and the only one who hasn't visited anyone is Daniel.
Yeah. Oh, well, he tried to call Robbie at the jail and Robbie hung up on
him. Yeah. Robbie hung
up. But still, yeah, you're right.
I mean, at least Johnny worked his way in.
Yep.
To both kids, you know?
Yeah, but I don't know if it would be, if Daniel's probably would see it as poor taste for him to show up at the hospital, being that it was his dojo, his student. I don't know. Maybe that's, and he didn't really, he never really had a connection with Miguel.
Yeah, that's true.
So I wouldn't really see him showing up there.
Yeah, not with Miguel. I want them to develop that, but that's like, we've talked about before how, and it played out in this episode, Johnny really has a connection with both. And he did kind of choose Miguel over Robbie, and it was dumb. But yeah, Daniel only has a connection with Robbie. And I think we've talked about all the rest of my notes. So that was great. Let's take a little break, but there's more to come. So stay with us. All right, we are back, and it's time for some news. Do we have news?
Just a little bit. It's a little sketchy looking for news on a show that has all 9 episodes released. So it's a little light because I'm trying to tread carefully and not get spoiled, because yeah, I've already been spoiled. Thank you very much. So I'd like to not be as spoiled.
I almost hit a headline. I saw a headline pop up from New Rock Stars, and I almost hit it. And then I was like, wait, stop. Don't do that, because that's going to spoil you on something.
Yeah, it's sketchy. It's something I have to tread carefully on Strange Indeed as well. So I have a little bit, and this comes from an interview that they did with Tamlin. So this was from ET Online. So they asked her, they said, what made you want to step back into her shoes? And what was it that made it a yes for you? She says, I think it was, and I want to emphasize the word, the rare and unique opportunity. Again, who gets to revisit where a character goes to 35 years later. And it's not only me, it's the whole world. I talked to co-creators Josh and John and Hayden about really rectifying the portrayal of Okinawa, which I am a part of that culture and that world. They gave me that permission. They gave me that license to say, absolutely, are you kidding? We want to absolutely honor that, reflect that, portray that. For them to give me that permission, to give me and Yugi that permission to revisit where our characters are 35 years later, but a real open door. They treated us with red carpet treatment. It's like, of course, please do this together. It was a joyful, wondrous feeling to step into those shoes again with Ralph. And they had been talking a little bit in the interview about some of the nostalgic parts of the season. And they said, having many of the original Karate Kid stars back for substantial arcs and not blink and you'll miss it cameos felt nostalgic. And she said, yes, exactly. I think that's why they're succeeding so well, the creators. They tried to serve the characters. They don't try to milk it or make it so cheesy that it becomes unrealistic. They're very clever. They're very smart. But on top of all of that, they try to honor the story. They try to honor the universe. That's why they're successful in bringing about the melancholy, the bittersweetness of nostalgia. It's both sweet and bittersweet. It's like, aw, but you feel good because both of them and everybody you see are still progressing in their journey. They're okay in the moment when you find them.
That's so cool that all these actors are coming back and they're totally into it.
Yeah.
It sounds like they had a good time filming the movies that they were in, too.
I want to see Dutch come back, Steve McQueen's kid, after he's in prison and everything.
Yeah, didn't they say like it was back. Just like there was like, about scheduling or something last season, why he wasn't in that?
Well, he has a raceway that he's busy with, so I don't know. Maybe he just doesn't want to, but it'd be great if they could get him to come back.
Yeah. The next one that we have is from comicbook.com. So co-creator Josh Hurwitz recently spoke with Cinema Blend about the possibility of Julie joining the show at some point. So everybody remember Julie from Karate Kid 4?
Friends?
So they,
sure, why not?
They said there have been discussions about the character behind the scenes. He says in our
What's her name? Julie. Do you know the actress?
Oh, Hilary Swank.
Yeah, Hilary Swank. She won an Oscar.
Sorry. I thought you were talking about the girl from Karate Kid 3 that they didn't have a romance because he kept romancing
her. No, Karate Kid 4. She was only 16. The one we don't really talk about.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
So they
the
have,
next Karate Kid.
Yes. So there have been discussions about her character behind the scenes. And he says, in our writer's room, we speak about literally every character that has appeared in the Miyagi-verse. So it's obvious that we've spoken about Julie Pierce. He said, as to whether or not she'll return to the series, that's something that you'll just have to wait to find out. So, of course, the major difference between Julie Pierce and all the other Karate Kid characters that have returned in Cobra Kai is that Julie was never a part of Daniel and Johnny's story. Neither of the main Cobra Kai characters ever interacted with Julie on screen. However, the influence of Mr. Miyagi looms large over all of Cobra Kai, so anyone associated with him has a pretty easy bridge into that story of the series. So according to Hurwitz, any character that had a relationship with Miyagi is officially canon to Cobra Kai, making them eligible to appear.
So I heard a rumor that she and Miyagi had a baby, and so she'll probably that can how they fit it in.
What?
So Henry Winkler can show up as the Fonz? Is he gonna? Oh wait, no, that's a different character.
I don't know.
But you're gonna jump the shark. Yeah.
No, I mean it would be great if she came back, except then we would have to watch the next Karate Kid and do an episode on it.
It's funny because I was at Krav like early this week and was. Somebody else on the other side of the room, I'm on one side, they're kind of on the other, and I heard them talking about, oh, have you seen Cobra Kai, the new season, it's so good, and I was kind of just giggling to myself, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm old enough to, you know, to remember those movies and watch them and love the series, and one of the younger guys, I don't really know his age, I know I'm a lot older than him, I know that, he's got to be maybe late 20s, maybe in 30, and he's like, oh yeah, he goes, Karate Kid 4, you saw that one, right? And I was like, yeah, but we don't talk about that one very much. He goes, dude, what? And clearly that movie must have connected with him in some way because he was really disappointed. I think I pissed him off.
Remember when those monks went bowling? That was so great.
I was like, dude, I don't like that one very much, okay?
Maybe it's not as bad as I remember.
The guy caught the arrow and
he was, right. I think I pissed him off because he just kind of turned away from me and walked away. I'm like, okay, fine, whatever. So anyway, that's all I've got for the news. Anymore. Yeah.
Interesting. They'd have to establish some sort of context of her and Daniel having met through Miyagi or something, or maybe they meet at Miyagi's grave or.
I was, trying to think of, I mean, if Miyagi's connected, then maybe she comes back looking for him or something to say,
you would think
you and I have a son. I'm just kidding.
You would think, I mean, if Miyagi and Daniel had a close relationship this entire, you know, until he passed away, that she would have crossed paths with Daniel at some point.
He would have known, huh?
Yeah.
Even though he's not in the movie, but
I mean, when Karate Kid 4 was made, was it when Daniel had just gotten married and had Samantha or what? You know, what
we'd have to figure out the context in that.
So. It was earlier than that because it was probably just a couple of years after Karate Kid 3, I think.
Mm.
It was, I remember Eric and I went to see it, so it was like 1990 or something like that.
Oh, wow.
And Eric was laughing at it the whole time, and I wanted it to be good, so I was mad at him. But then I was like, you're right.
It was funny.
All right. Thank you. That was good. I'm glad you were able to get a couple of news bits without getting spoiled. We just had a little bit of listener feedback this time, just a couple of comments. So, Rich, want to do the first one?
Yeah, our first piece is from Ben Beck. He writes, just listened to the first episode covering Cobra Kai, and I have one request going forward. More Terry Silver impressions.
I like that.
More Terry Silver impressions. I like that, Ben. I like that. I'm going to use that.
Wow.
I love you guys.
You win a point, you lose a point. Win a point, you lose a point.
If Terry Silver doesn't come back, that's a huge missed opportunity for this show. Please. That's the only thing I want. And Allie. Rima.
Nick Poblocki says, Cobra Kai is everything the Star Wars sequels should have been.
Ooh.
Imagine if they would have had The Force Awaken and it's Daniel and Johnny. Wait a minute. No, I think I know what he means, that they handled it well.
Right.
All right. And we got a few calls here. Mr. Jonathan Bookalil called. I think he took Rima's, or Rima, you had a request that he call in. And so he took your request, and here it is.
Yay.
Hello, Jason and Rich, and a special hello to Rima Joe. Ask Ooh. And you shall receive. Thanks again for all the positivity regarding my Mandalorian call. It really made my day. Great to be back on again with Cobra Kai. I really love its schlockiness and the glorious montages. And where else can you see actual flashbacks when they do flashbacks? So good. As for these two episodes, lots of great scenes. Johnny and Daniel on the road, karate soccer, Chekhov's soup pot, dropping a spinal surgery patient on the floor, and cheerleader car wash. Who knew that was still allowed on TV? We do see, however, that Daniel's lifelong mission to destroy Johnny still continues unabated. And although I love him being in Japan as one of my favorite places to visit, I can't believe he also wants to destroy his marriage trying to seduce Mariko through Mr. Miyagi's love letters. But then came the letter about Daniel, and damn it, the show did it to me again. Just when I'm settling in to enjoy a little light entertainment, I'm hearing Mr. Miyagi's voice in my head and I'm getting kicked in the feels. Nostalgia, reassurance, someone as a kid I knew Daniel could always count on. And who I wished was in my life growing up, teaching me karate, giving me sweet rinds, and always being there when I needed him. So hard not to hit the play next, but I'm doing this 2x2 along with you guys. So look forward to the season. All the best, Jonathan.
Hey, awesome. Jonathan. That was awesome.
Yeah, it's a good point about flashbacks. Where else can you get actual flashbacks like that? Where they show the characters young. That's cool.
Yeah.
They do it a lot.
Thanks,
great.
Man.
That's great. Thanks, Jonathan.
All right. Here is Michael Caruso.
Hey, Jason, Rima, and Richard. It's Mike from Cincinnati. I just finished watching episodes 3 and 4 of Cobra Kai season 3. And first thing that stood out to me is like all the characters coming back from earlier in the series and from previous movies. You got Bobby, you got Sid coming back, who I thought we'd never see again. You got Tom Cole, you got Anoush. We finally caught up with Tori in this for the first time since last season. You got the pawn shop guy and the homeless woman showing up, which makes you a little sad that Aisha couldn't fit into the story anywhere. And of course, the big ones. You've got Kumiko and Chosen making their debut in this series for the first time since Karate Kid 2. And then the other thing that stood out to me was, you know, Kreese going to Robbie at the end. It feels like the big story beat of the episode, you know, kind of giving us a hint as to where the series might be going. And I just like what they're doing, where they're kind of characters aren't stagnant. They're constantly changing. Once somebody's good, they're not good permanently. Robbie started out bad early in the series. He found the light with Miyagi-Do. Now he's moving towards the dark. Johnny was, you know, we were led to believe in the first movie he was in the dark, and now in the series he's been slowly moving towards the light. And then you've got Miguel, who started in the light as a good kid and then was sort of misguided by Johnny a little bit to being in the dark a little in season 2, and now he's, you know, he showed mercy at the end of season 2 and he's coming towards the light, and Johnny's going to guide him there. And I just like what they're doing there. It feels true to life. It feels more realistic. People aren't stagnant. They're constantly changing, and I like what they're doing there. So I look forward to seeing where the series goes, and I look forward to hearing what you guys have to say about it. Thanks. Bye.
I love that. Yeah, that just thinking about it as moving between the light and the dark. It's cool.
Yeah.
Great
call.
Yeah,
I was thinking too as he was talking. It's like, well, so we're left with Miguel calling Johnny Sensei again, right? So how is he going to go back to Cobra Kai, or is he?
Yeah, I think, well, I don't want to say, but something in the trailer gave a clue to what's going to happen there, but in case people didn't watch the trailers, I don't say, so you'll just have to wait and see.
All right. Find out in about an hour. Yep.
Mike Caruso sounds a bit like Paik, don't you think?
I was gonna say the same thing. Yeah. He sounded like Paik.
He kind of does.
That's Paik. Yeah. Come on, Paik. You don't have to change your name. Just kidding. And then, of course, we have Steve Brown.
Hi, Jason, Rima, Rich, and special guest Steve on House Podcastica. I just watched the two episodes, episode 3 and 4. Actually, I watched episode 1 and 2 again, and then I watched episodes 3 and 4 for the first time. Really enjoyed them. Can't wait to watch them again and really dive down deep into it. I'm a little intimidated. I don't know if I'm going to remember to say this when we record, but I am a little intimidated because you guys do such a great job and do such a deep dive into these episodes that I'm just hoping I can pull my own weight, hold my own weight, or how's the phrase go? I don't know. Anyway, looking forward to watching them again and jotting down some notes. Talk to you later.
That was awesome.
That's awesome. Nice. We had some great call-ins here at On House Podcastica. Yeah.
And you were great, Steve. I'm glad you came on. It was
been awesome.
Totally. Thank you. It was my pleasure. Cool. I enjoyed it immensely.
All right. That is our show. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. And once again, thanks for coming on, Steve. Maybe you can come on again next season or something.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be cool. If you guys want to write in or record a message and send it in like a few people did this time, yeah, great calls. So we'd love to have more of that. You can send that to us at waxonwaxoff@podcastica.com.
We also put up a post for each week's episode on our Facebook page at facebook.com/housepodcastica.
And be sure to check out the other great podcasts at podcastica.com.
So, speaking of that, how is The Stand going over at Strange Indeed?
Ben and I are having a great time talking about Good. The Stand. Yeah, there's a lot of mixed feelings about the show. There's, you either, I think, love it or you hate it, or, you know, there's not a whole lot of in between. There's might be a little bit, but, you know, I'm enjoying it. I'm definitely entertained, and Ben and I are just having a blast covering it, for sure. So, yeah.
Good, because yeah, I saw the reviews were mixed, but I'm glad that you guys are digging it and you're having a good time. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it yet. You got me curious now, though, just what you just said.
Could go either
and
way.
And then, like I mentioned at the top of the podcast, Steve, you're on Panels to Pixels with Mark.
Yes, I'm on Panels to Pixels, which is on the Next Level Podcast Network. So you can find me there with my podcast, with my co-host Mark. We're efforting Wonder Woman 1984, do a review of that with a friend of ours, hopefully, to get involved with. In fact, we're trying to get a couple of friends on if we could, but we don't know how schedules are going to work. And then after that, I'm not sure where we're going. But Snowpiercer is about to come back, and we covered Snowpiercer last year, and plus WandaVision is coming out, so we'll probably be double-dipping for a little bit.
I'd love to come on and do an episode of WandaVision with you if you want to guest.
I'll let Mark know. Because we're going to have a couple of weeks before Snowpiercer starts that we'll have a couple episodes, I think, of WandaVision. So definitely we'll try to get you in there.
Sweet.
So Snowpiercer has been turned into a series?
Yes. Yeah, they did season one last year. It's got Jennifer Connelly is in it, and I don't remember anybody else.
What?
Once I see Jennifer Connelly, that's the only one that I...
I've been meaning to watch that. I never got to it.
Season one was really, really good, and season two should be starting up end of January. So,
cool. Awesome. And then just want to remind you guys, if you pledge $2 a month or more at patreon.com/JasonCabassi, you can get ad-free versions of this show and also Walking Dead cast. So that's, and there's a bunch of other perks and stuff. That's patreon.com/JasonCabassi. Thanks for your support. All right, that is our show.
Thanks for listening.
How do they get the coffee in there?
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.